NBC News Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
The garage sale has been extended. Hurry in and get a king bed for the price of a queen or a queen for twins. Plus, get a free adjustable base with qualifying ceiling purchase. Or save $500 on all Tempur-Pedic Breeze mattresses. With our low price guarantee, you can rest assured you'll get the best bed at the best price. Only at Mattress Firm. Offer valid with qualifying purchase. Restrictions apply. Auto purchase paying locations only. For offer details, visit mattressfirm.com/sale.
Liberty Mutual Insurance Company presents... Doug.
Check it out, Limu. A roadside carnival.
Step right up, folks. Test your strength. Come see the fire-breathing baby.
Let's fan out and tell people that Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance so you only pay for what you need.
Look! An email wearing sunglasses!
Email? Famous. Only pay for what you need.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your alternative talk weather outlook for Monday. Sunny skies today. High temperatures around 79, 80 degrees. Shaping up to be a pretty nice day. Tonight, clear skies. Low temperatures dropping down to about 59, 60 for Tuesday. And for Wednesday, more sunshine expected. High temperatures a little warmer for Tuesday, around 82. Clear skies through the overnights again for Tuesday night. Lows down to about 58. Wednesday, though, a little cooler, about 5, 6 degrees, down to about 75, 76. But still sunny skies. Partly cloudy skies for Wednesday night, lows down to about 56.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Welcome to Get Big Out Loud Radio, where we explore living the complex, funny, and beautiful ride of life with me, Carrie Knutson, and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Are your thoughts keeping you small? Are you ready to get big? I will offer you ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action. Explore what is keeping you small and how to shift your behaviors in order to get big. Learn what is possible for you. Get ready to get big and live life out loud starting now.
When we talk about what Carrie does, Get Big Out Loud, this is where we cannot negotiate and compromise this. This is Carrie. She speaks. She's a professional speaker. She is a school counselor, storyteller, a mom, but she's also an expert in emotional intelligence, EQ. So today, I can't wait to hear from her. You know about what? I can't wait to hear from her about this. Who am I now? Navigating the new normal. Carrie, you ready for this?
Oh, I'm ready, Dr. Pat. Anything with you. Yes, I love it. I'm ready to go.
This is, and let me just adjust my mic up for a minute. This is a really important conversation because, you know, when I think about it and I think about the fact that we're talking about this, while we may not be, and maybe you can help us out with this a little bit, while people may not be walking around saying, oh, Carrie, how I am now, on the inside, are we all thinking that?
Well, here's what I wanted to talk about this week, the idea of the new normal, because I've been thinking about what we've been calling different times in our lives over the last year and a half. Like the pre-pandemic time, most people consider they're normalized. And the pandemic time was like, OMG, not normal, abnormal, whatever, right? And then the pandemic, and then I think we kind of went into this next normal of mask wearing, social distancing, Zooming. We all know what these things are now, what we had no idea before. And then the new vernacular for what's happening now is the new normal. And so I wanted to talk about it because I think what's happening to people is we're asking ourselves, oh, my gosh, I've been through all this change, and now I'm in a new wave of change. And I asked myself that, which is why I came up with the topic. Who am I now after I've experienced all this? And I thought, if I'm asking myself that, you might be too. And that's what I wanted to talk about today. Who am I now? You know, at this point, after all I've experienced, and I wanted to talk about some ways to transition into this new normal with grace and with also some respect for what we've been through. So that's what I'd like to talk about today.
I'm already speechless. Listen to you. I'm actually trying to figure out which part of that I go to. Let me start with a little ditty, a little story. I wake up in the morning, and I'm not sure what I'm going to put on when I go to the office or the studio. I don't usually think in advance. What am I wearing? Who am I interviewing? But I've started to pay a little bit of attention more. But this gives you an example of what I'm made of a little bit. And actually, our producers and others have gotten to know me. You all get to know me really good. We work a lot up front. I get up this morning, and I put on, everybody can see this, it's like a green striped shirt. Haven't worn it in 2 years. Put it on. Had a different jacket. Decided to put a black jacket. But I love my little polka dotty thing. I love this. For most people, that is like, dude, stripes and polka dots don't go. And I want to talk.
Maybe that's your new normal.
But that's why I'm bringing it up to you. I'm bringing it up to you because who am I now? Am I the person that, man, 18 months ago I would have agonized over somebody's comment about my polka dotty fit thing and my other striped shirt?
Right.
Can you talk to how our lives went from this? Because it's hard to imagine people not being impacted by it. Now, in my case, I got to the point where I've just been through 18 months and through the grace of God and Goddess and a lot of other people, our business here, and you all have supported us in doing it, we're still here. But let's talk about this. Who am I? What was your answer to your own question? Is that too soon in the show?
No, let's just jump right in.
Is that too soon in the show to go there?
No, not at all. That's why I thought of that, because I think it's compelling, right? I'm not going to answer straight out, who am I now? I'm going to give you some ideas around why it's important to ask that question, because everyone will have a different answer. But isn't the question compelling? And you look at yourself in your life right now, like when you see what you've survived and gone through and how you've adapted and what you've experienced, you can't help but be changed by that. And the reason it's important to take a pause to reflect on who am I now is if we just rush to the next thing of the new normal, we're going to miss out on some great opportunities to capitalize on what we've learned and to have that confidence, right, as we go forward. So the idea of, like, who am I now, I need to reflect on everything that happened since the start of the pandemic. I also need to understand what I've been through in a way that doesn't, like, diminish my experience as compared to the collective. Like, some people will be, I've heard this a lot, like, well, at least be grateful you still have a job, or at least be grateful for this, but we don't even give time to, but yeah, do I still get to be sad about this? Do I still get to feel like I missed out on that? Do I still have to have some emotions? Do I always have to find a silver lining? Or can what be is, like, there were a lot of losses, a lot of changes, some good things, and a lot of opportunities now that we're seeing that feel good, but we've just been through something. So it's almost like you can't just move on, I think, and miss out on the juiciness of learning about what you just experienced, because that's when I think the really good information comes out. Like, if you call it mining for your own information. So if you come up in a point in your life and you have to make a change, sometimes it's good to reflect on, oh, I've done change before. I've managed that. I've gone through what were the skills that I had, or what did I need to get through it? What helped me? And if you can mine for your own information as you go through the next cycle of change, you can utilize that to be more successful. So who am I now? I am the person, and this is interesting when you think about answering that question for yourself, I am the person who could not even envision doing anything virtual. pretty much like we're talking to a girl who didn't know what a light ring was or a camera, where to put them all, and certainly was not excited about any kind of online platform whatsoever. A person who believes that the best and only and superior way of connecting was in person, a person who had only had experience in front of live audiences, right? And now, all this time later, I'm the person, who am I now, is the person that I did, this morning I did my 103rd virtual presentation since the pandemic started.
Wow.
103rd. Right, I've been counting, and now I set up my office space, and now I've talked to so many more people. I can see the benefit. I see who I am as a trainer in a in-person space, in a virtual space, and what I need to do. I've grown from that experience. But if I don't ask myself, what did you learn, Cherry? Like, what got you to this place? How did you overcome that? And now because I'm sitting on the other side happy, but it sure was a rough road to get there.
Yeah.
I sure wasn't excited about any of this,
yeah.
Right? So that's why, like, who am I now is a great rhetorical question for yourself, and coming up with little examples like that can be incredibly powerful.
I love the way you're describing this, and I want to talk about two things before we go to break, and then we're going to take a really, really short break. Malia, we're going to take a really short break. One of the things I'm struck by, and I actually talked about it in the show, and actually I didn't get any, nobody really responded. We went through 2007, 8, 9, and 10. And maybe 10 was the tail end of it. I think even in 6, maybe 7 is where it started, where we went through an economic situation unlike anything that generations had been through since the 20s. We went through that. The difference with this was in that economic situation, and it was global, but you know, I don't know what went on in the other parts of the world. But in the United States of America, you know, what we were faced with, unprecedented psychological contract references, betrayal, breaking, homes being lost, mortgages being just jacked up, lack of cooperation from any bank that lent you any money. We went through a period of time where people, for the first time I think in our history, were people who were pretty well upper middle class across the board. You know, I'm not even talking about the people that really were at the poverty level because they just got more poverty. But they actually learned how to survive better.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get blindsided by something that is so out of the context of your world, you know, you're working, you're earning money. You don't expect to have the company you work for 25 years walk in and say, we're filing, right?
Mm-hmm.
This happened so across the board and didn't go away in 6 months. It didn't go away in 18 months. Didn't go away for a long time. And do you know that in a short study I did on this, and I didn't pick it up and continue it, because my first go around with this in 2001 brought me to my knees. But these folks are still suffering and had nobody to talk to. Their stories have never been told. They never came to the forefront to talk about how they had to dress up every day and not tell their family they didn't have jobs, pretended to go to the office for 6 months, 8 months, while taking money out of their 401k the entire time. Some of them had to pack up and put their children in a car. They never talked about it. My question to you, in the context of what you just laid out, there is a real downside to not really looking at this for ourselves. But there could be the good, the bad, and the ugly in this. So when we come back, let's talk about what kinds of things did you experience? Let's talk about that. Those of you that are watching on Facebook, chime in. What kinds of things did you experience? Did you experience a new set of something that brought you to a level? Was it difficult? Was it sad? Combination of both? When we come back, we're going to talk about the storyboard or your book and the chapters in it that lead to the many, many pages that are so visually vivid in terms of your experience. What about it, including writing that story, has changed you? Carrie Knudsen is going to take us on that journey. Get Big Out Loud. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome back. Welcome back to Get Big Out Loud. Carrie Knudsen, this is her show, Living in Complex, Funny and Beautiful, Writer Life. I get to sort of be the MC in this journey. But the energy of this topic, you know, this way of she works with people, whether it's mentoring, coaching, whether it's helping people in a counseling setting, whether it's speaking or digging deeply into emotional intelligence, doesn't matter. You know, it's what she does. But the one thing that really many of us do is we don't really look at ourselves. Sometimes we're forced to. For those of you out there, please go over to knutsonspeaks.com, K-N-U-T-S-O-N, speaks.com. Oh, and certainly, Leah is going to be putting the URL up, so you'll be able to see that. But we started out today navigating the new normal. What if you navigate or attempt, I'm going to say attempt to navigate a new normal without fully exploring the experience that are leading up to this? You know, before the break, what I talked about, and I've had a couple of this in my generation, my efforts, my entire body of research was based on the repeal of the psychological contract of work, the unilateral appeal across the board. Every company followed suit, and it started in early 90. And within 3 years, we had repealed the psychological contract of work, where I said to you, Carrie, you work hard here. You put in your sweat. And at the end of X amount of years, we're going to reward you and give you a pension. That was repealed overnight. It caused toxic shock waves in the definition, the identity of who we are, how we related. I had a bell-shaped head, then I had the cracked bell. And then we went through it again in other ways. Big, I'm talking big. Now, there's a lot of little parts. Then we went through the economic downturn. I don't even know what we're calling that thing. But people don't even remember it. The ripple effect of that, though, was just like in the past, people's stories in the repeal of the psychological never got told. How do I know that? Because my research was to interview these people. 1,200 pages of interview notes, and I will tell you, across the board, they never were witnessed. Here we go. 18 months, a global affair. Shame and guilt, just like before, perhaps from things that you didn't expect, perhaps from not knowing how to navigate and manage. But if we can, for a nanosecond, pause and ask that question, who am I now? Boy, where do you think we go with that?
Well, I think what you brought up is so important, because if you look up historically about big things that have happened, right, and then the effect is almost like the ripple effect later. You don't feel it at the moment, but you see the wave starting small and getting bigger and bigger. And the reason it's important to talk about this now is, to me, is the idea of, like, why let the ripple effect get so big, right, and not in a productive way? Why just continue to go down the path and not recognize what we've been through, the value of our experience, the stories that we have to share without judgment? Because, again, that's like, is my story worthwhile, or I didn't have it as bad as you, and then you had it worse, and I'm judging, right? And then also the ability to heal from it. It's not like our anxiety is just going to go away tomorrow. If we built up over the last, you know, I don't know, how many months, 16 months, some anxiety, some differentiated coping mechanisms, some ways that might be even maladaptive to our regular lives, but worse in the pandemic, right? So thinking about how isolated we have to be in the pandemic, that kind of behavior, isolation, we know we need connection to other people. We know we need connection to our community and other people. So to me, the forced isolation showed a lot about who we were. But now it's kind of awkward to go back out in the world, right? And when we say, who am I now? Am I the person that needs to practice social engagement again? Am I the person that needs to respect that maybe it's a little awkward for me to be going back out? Do I hug, handshake, fist pump? Am I more tired by social engagement because I haven't done them in 16 months? So I have to, temper that more than I would used to, because we're used to being so busy. So those are the things you have to ask yourself, not with judgment or critique, simply with curiosity, yeah. Right? Like, who am I now? What do I feel like around this moment, right? And I think that is the imperative thing. You mentioned a lot of things that happened in the past that had ripple effects that weren't positive, right? Because we just plow through to the next thing. And my invitation is, let's pause. Let's recognize what we've been through, and let's honor it. And then what you were talking about is through story, like honoring our story helps, and saying it, sharing it, writing it, talking about it, helps get it out of our head and on and into another world, either on the page or to another person. And to me, that's very powerful.
Yeah.
It's very powerful.
I got to tell you, everything I mentioned, and I really can point to this in a laundromat, everything I've mentioned where it seemed like when I share these little tidbits with people, they just like, how did you get through it? And here's what I tell them. What did I do with that downsizing? I decided to go back to school immediately. My boss is ripping the badge off my neck. I go back to school, I get a degree, but that degree and the people in there support me so broadly and so effectively. They encourage me to go on. I go on and I apply in an arena that I have no business applying in, with GE scores that shouldn't be really acceptable to most major universities, but except to one of the top universities. I had to wait a year because some circumstance, some absolutely ridiculously serendipity circumstance of who the chair was that year who wanted experienced people in. And I go into a program and I think about what I just experienced in the past year and a half, and I discovered, who am I? I don't know. But what did I just go through?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know, and I couldn't find it. So I decided to research it. I decided to investigate it. When we went through 9, 10, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever those years were, for us it was 7 through 10. That's when we started to feel it. That's when our listeners called into the show and said, I've just got laid off. I can't tell you how many callers. I just can't. It was one after the other. It didn't matter what hour.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened? How does it change? How did it change me? So this is a question for you. I've had a lot of training in my lifetime on how to pull myself up. I had great mentors. As much as I really was in conflict with my stepmom for most of my young years, she became my greatest teacher. But I learned some things. And even though this is a really tough time for a lot of people, people lost their parents and couldn't touch them.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that every one of us have learned. Some muscle that we built we didn't know we had. Tell us about that.
Oh, that's so beautiful, because that's the part about being resilient, right? Recognizing what you have survived and knowing that part of you could do it, because that's what you bring to the next phase, right? That ability to believe in yourself, to believe in your resilience, and to almost have fresh eyes. Like, here's what I think. When we go through a crisis, we cannot process the crisis because we are in it. All of our brain power is focused on what needs to happen next and how, and we're not really reflecting because we cannot. Our brains don't function that way. So what I find is that once the crisis is over and you take the time consciously to reflect, that's when you learn the lessons of like who you are, how you showed up, what you're proud of, what you're cringe-worthy, right, like what you would change. But that's the idea of don't lose the lesson of the experience, right? And but you can't learn a lesson while you're doing the thing, right? Like, that's why it's hard to be in a situation and reflect on it at the same time. So when you think about, gosh, this happened and that happened, and taking some time to go, whoa, what did I just live through? Again, and let me just honor my experience without going to comparison, either better or worse, or diminishing it in some way, right? We all had something happen to us this year. This was a global pandemic that affected everyone in one way or another. And the value of that can't be judged on a scale, like who gets more. It's just what it is. It's like trying to judge flowers for being more beautiful or less beautiful. Like you can't, that is what it is, right? So there's no more value. It just looks different. And I think it's so important as we look at ourselves to honor that. But the idea is like, stop for a minute, honor, and talk about what you've been through, right? And those experiences, what was hard for you? What didn't work? What worked? What are you proud of? What will you take moving forward that you know for sure about yourself? Because I didn't know some things about myself before this that I know for sure about myself now. I thought I was tenacious, right? But I had never had to practice it like I had during this pandemic in terms of I had two kids. My husband and I, we were both working in schools, plus two kids in different schools, like orchestrating that, finding places for people to be, doing my speaking tour and working and kids in pandemic moments. I made stuff happen, and I'm proud of it now. But sometimes I look around my house, and I'm like, I can see how the year went with depending on where stuff is. And I'm like, look what we made happen, right? And I have fresh eyes, though, now as I'm cleaning up the house and I'm taking our mobile offices and putting things back where they belong so we can live in our house again. But I'm thinking, what did we – man, I was tenacious. I made – and I'm proud of that. And what I just kind of put that in my pocket a little bit as I move to the next part of my life, because I might need to draw on that tenacity for the next challenge. And it might not look like this, but the value that I have and the skill set that I have are there. And I have confidence in that because I've seen it and I've proved it to myself and I've recognized it.
And that really gets us to really chat for a minute bit about this phrase, new normal. There are two phrases I'm really a little excited. Well, there are a couple of them, but I'm really a little excited about that, you know, once upon a time had a really negative connotation. I want to talk to you about new normal even before we go to break. New normal. I think it is an oxymoron. Right. But, I mean, there are a couple of phrases that I'm hearing recently that when I say them out of context to people that don't know what I'm talking about, you know, I get sort of a side eye. New normal, you and I talked about. And let's just dig down for a minute. I don't quite get how we even describe the journey of humanity as normal.
Help me. Yeah, what's the normal? I agree. I totally agree.
So what are we basing it on? Is we basing it on the commercial that comes on that sees a commercial for a celebrity or somebody really, really rich that has a gold-plated bathroom, and you go through the thing and you know, like the new normal is buy this candy bar.
Mm-hmm.
What? Because it's got a gold wrapper, and the guy is, like, sitting there, like, in this gold house in some bathrobe, and how do you get me from there to there?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm struggling with the word normal. I have a degree in this. Never got it. Don't get it today. Tell me what normal is.
Well, that is the most perfect question ever because it seems like how you identify yourself. Most of us think we're normal and everyone else is not, right? It's like I'm normal in some ways that you're not. Like, and if we see the difference in someone, like, that's not normal. They're like, we always are judging people by our value systems and our filters.
And my scarf and my shirt.
Yeah. But you know, like that you're even thinking about that? I didn't even think about that.
I didn't think about it until somebody pointed out, and I'm like, and I think it was like a compliment. Like, you know, it was like, wow, that's really cool. I would have never thought to do that. I thought they were talking about my hair. You know, so I was like, yeah, I just did it. They said, no, your scarf and your little striped shirt. So I think we have a new awareness on normal, though, now. I think we're actually even asking the question, and we didn't do it before. So when I think about that question that you ask about, look, we've gone through 18 months, you know, what is the aha, what are some of the aha moments?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we were talking about the word normal and that some people are saying, I have got to throw that out. First of all, my life wasn't very normal. I worked a 60-hour job. I have three children at home. My husband, my wife is highly there, is highly supportive. Our days is not in the official watch the television show, except if you're watching WandaVision, maybe. My life isn't like that. It's more like WandaVision, I think, where I'm actually pink, but I dress up as not pink, and I show up, and I can fly, and I can throw things. But what is normal?
Mm-hmm.
Are you thinking we're changing our view of that word? What's your experience?
Well, I feel like everybody really wants, and we've done this with basically everything, we want to be able to codify and name and describe things and have an agreed-upon language. And so that's why I think we're seeing this again, next normal, new normal, post-pandemic, because we're searching for ways to describe the experience, right? But so sometimes the semantics of the word normal, right, for some people, like, what if my life, well, what was normal, right? What's this next normal? And some people are also saying, we say normal means, well, we'll go back. And a lot of people say we shouldn't go back, right? So there's a lot of really rich conversation. But you can tell we haven't settled on it yet because
we're
searching. But I think it is the human condition to want to name and codify and kind of box in experiences so that we can talk about it. And I think it's interesting that we've never had an experience like this. Like, I always say, I don't know about you, but it's my first pandemic, right? Like, I haven't done this before. So my learning curve is 100%. So even how I'm going to talk about it, right, is going to change over time and it's going to change from my experience. But I do think it's a worthwhile conversation to wrestle with the, what should we call this? Is normal, is using that word, you know, offensive to some people or just doesn't sit right? Should we think of a different way to describe it? Or are we going to agree upon that, like, whatever was normal for you, what you did before March 2020, whatever that was, is probably you're doing something different now because of what you experienced, right? And we look to, we need words, right, to talk about our experiences.
Oh.
That's what we're doing. We're struggling with that, with what to say about it and how to codify it and the semantically appropriate words to use for it.
Can I give it through a lens for an 11-year-old?
Tell me.
Not too long ago, having a conversation, a number of us adults, let's just call ourselves adults, but the conversation, now that I think about it, it was not so adult. And it was about normal. And this 11-year-old, beautiful daughter, 11-year-old in the other room, really quite bright, you know, loves to study everything in the United States, loves to study the geography, the history, knows some places in the United States that people can go through six lifetimes and not know. 11 years old, right? We're having a conversation, and we're asking, well, what is normal? And so in the room, she comes, and she looks around the table, and she says, I have your answer. We're thinking, are you listening to the conversation? Like, you know, seriously, people, the walls are not that thick. Do you want to hear her answer?
Yes.
Normal is a town in McLean County, Illinois, United States. As the 2010 census says, the town's population was about 52,500. Normal is smaller of two principal municipalities in Bloomington, Normal Metropolitan Area, and Illinois, and Illinois is the seventh most populous community outside Chicago area. Its elevation is maybe under 1,000 feet. Weather is mostly sunny. It's a beautiful place, but for everybody.
What did you say after that?
And she went on to say, and by the way, the unemployment rate is lower than the national average, and she walked out of the room. Now, why am I sharing that story? Because, you see, we all are going to get to really put this into our own perspective. Mm-hmm. I love what you said. Here's what's always been the dilemma for normal. The dilemma for normal, other than, just love this kid anyway, but other than normal, this is what we learn about it. See if this even fits your definition, can I?
Yeah.
Normal is conforming to a standard, usually typical or expected. I don't know anybody before the pandemic that was doing that. Do you?
When you put it in that context, is that interesting? Say it again.
That's in a dictionary definition.
Uh-huh.
It's like one of the look-up dictionary people. Normal, conforming to a standard, usually typical or expected.
I think
we do it, we have moments of it. But if you were to say to somebody, like, Carrie, like, is that you? I mean, is your life really like that? No, because look at what you just described your life like.
Well, I'm thinking when you say typical or expected, I'm even thinking outside of the pandemic. The first thing it makes me think of is when I said I wanted to get a degree in psychology, someone said, what are you going to do with that degree? Right? And then throughout my life, I've been thinking, well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do that. And I don't know, but like the limiting beliefs about what's normal are when I don't just want to have a private practice and I want to speak and do a storytelling show and like coach and do other things, like, can a psychologist do that? Can a counselor do it? Like, like what's normal for that and in your field or like in your personal life? I have a friend, I was thinking about her normal. She and her husband have always had jobs in different places and then they kind of meet up and they've had this kind of unconventional life that works for them because of the demands of their job. They don't have kids and they do this. And it's funny because I'm like, wow, I don't know if I could ever do that. And then I think, well, I don't have to. Because I didn't meet somebody that had those demands, so that's not normal for me. But I was just thinking of that recently, like the normalness of either we kind of fight against normal, but then we gravitate towards it, right? We're supposed to want to be normal, but then a lot of us have to break out of that status quo to do what we really want to do, right?
I just tried it today. Okay, and let's talk about this because there's a big idea behind this that's really important. Because for those of us that are going through it, we have to have an outlet for this. And you have some tools you work with. I've used this tool. Now for me, it's less about writing. I will talk into my phone about experiences. And I had one today. I just got done with lunch, which we always have lunch because we don't have time to actually meet. And I mean, can you hear this lame excuse right now I'm giving you? So we have lunch together. We talk about cool things, but it always ends up with work. And I made the statement today because I've been coming in early. I have early meetings with people that are developing stuff for us. So I come in early and I say, I really like to leave early today because I like to hit Home Depot. Why? To have fun at Home Depot? No, I need a part for my weed whacker. So can we leave early today? And I was like, yeah, we're talking about that. Leave early. That would be good. And I go look at the calendar, and there's an appointment for 4 o'clock today. And I'm trying to create a new normal for myself based on my experience of the past 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this past 18 months, something extraordinary happened. I took better care of myself, not in every way. But I'm working with nutritionists. I got 2 new knees. My best friend spent a year with me. I had to, I found out I had to move. I moved into a new place, building this great place, right? And I just, what I'm trying to carry forward is those times in the pandemic that were not completely filled with work, where you actually took a moment and you went and planted a plant. But now I'm back to the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And a 4 o'clock appointment shows up on my calendar today.
And you're like, oh, I'm going to struggle with my Home Depot trip, but I can't do it, right? Like, I love what you said. This is what I want to acknowledge. What you said is something that I think some people are afraid to say out loud. They're like, in some ways, during the pandemic, you took better care of yourself. Your schedule slowed down. You had more time and opportunity. You got to spend the year with your best friend. You got to move. You had the things that maybe you didn't even know how successful you'd be, and now you're sitting on this like, oh, it was successful in a lot of ways for me with my business, but also me as a person. I was successful with myself because I was forced to slow down. And then that's what I mean about analyzing what you experienced, because if you really feel the benefit of like what happened to you as something that has value and is a priority, even if you don't do it perfectly, that's something like my self-care is something I want to transport into this next time. And I'm going to have to set up different boundaries. As the world comes crashing back in, I will have to take responsibility because I know that I want that. I want to take that lesson, and I'm benefiting from it, and I don't want to go back. Right? But I always say sometimes you got to fight for change. And the universe,
you got to fight for it like you're fighting for your life, Carrie.
Yes. And I feel like the universe is always asking, at least for me, how bad do you want it? How bad do you want the change, Carrie? How bad do you want it?
Oh, so when we come back, I want to talk about something you got to help us all with. How do we write our story, right? How do we write this? How do we help understand who we are in the new normal? Because I'm really getting some insight. I've learned to really look at my reaction to things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, my personality is my personality. But I've learned to modify it. I am clearly an introvert. If you ask the 3 new producers if they really think I'm an introvert, I will guarantee you their answer will be no. If they could count how many times I walk maybe 35 feet down the hall, barge into their office, stop what they're doing to give them some information.
Right.
But here's the question. Who am I and who do I want to become? And how do I build the bridge? Do I want to be less judgmental, less responsive? Have I had to learn that? Because I realize now I'm sharing a space with my 2 kids, my dog, my spouse, partner. Maybe my boss comes over because he or she doesn't have internet. And my God, we're in like a 700-square-foot apartment. What have I had to learn from that? When we come back, how can we diminish? How can we cultivate? How can we stop criticizing? How can we learn a little bit more about the inner workings of care and compassion for ourselves at the deepest level? When we come back, we'll talk about that. And don't forget the show that I'm going to be doing later this week. The show's already done. But there's a show I'm doing, and one of our new producers picked the topic. And it is quite challenging. It is like this one. It's interesting. We are now learning, Carrie. We have to learn to change our perspective almost every minute of every day. Let's take a short break. When we come back, it's all Carrie. Carrie Knutson's going to walk us through how do we do it. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Transformation Talk Radio Network. There's Dr. Pat and me, Carrie Knutson from Knutson Speaks. Today, we're having an awesome conversation around the topic of who am I now? And we're exploring the semantics of saying we're going into the new normal and the importance of storytelling and honoring ourselves. We're talking about so many great things around this idea of who am I now?
And I love that we're talking about it. You know, earlier in the show, I want to hit you up with this because we need some tools now, and especially in defining and identifying what we've actually been through. But when I was telling you before, like I look up the dictionary, right? And so you can look it up in Webster, right? This has been like the mission in the Webster deal for like a million years, conforming to a type, standard, regular pattern characterized by that, which is considered usual, typical, or routine. So no matter how you carve it, there's nothing that is going to say, let's go back to normal. It can't happen because we are not in a standard, regular pattern characterized, which is usual, typical, or routine. So in fact, you and I today, aren't we throwing an idea out there that says it may not be a new normal because that's weird. Mm-hmm. Because are we ever going to go back to a standard, regular pattern type characterized by which is considered usual? Are we? I'm still wearing my mask. Hello. So take us on the road with how we can honor, respect, document, and witness our own journey to discovering who am I today.
And what I love about that question is that it's rich enough to encompass anybody, right? Look at yourself in this moment. And also, don't let the semantics trip you up. Because the idea of most people, that normal is a pretty limiting place for most people, right, in terms of what they feel. Most people in some way don't feel like they are normal in one way or another. And because you have to think, do I make the normal amount of money? Do I live in a normal place? Do I have a normal lifestyle? Do I weigh the normal amount? Is my hair the normal color? Do I have the normal amount of kids? Or not, like, am I the normal sexuality and supposed to be? Is my gender expression normal? Whatever we're saying, right? When we're it's not like one bucket. Like, there's a lot of different buckets to normal, right? Of how I show up in the world. And I'm just thinking, is it normal? One funny thing is my dad's very Norwegian. He was very Norwegian. Before he passed, he wore Norwegian shirts and everything. And there's something called Sittenamime. Which is Independence Day for Norway, May 17th. I guarantee you I'm the only person who, in Broomfield, Colorado, dressed up in my Norwegian outfit and said, happy Sittende Mai. Like, whatever. That's not normal, right? Except it is. Right? Like, and I keep thinking about, depending on your cultural background, your heritage, your expectations from your family, the language you speak, how you express yourself, all those things come in categories of normal, not normal, right? If we're like in a binary yes, no, good, bad, right, wrong, normal, unnormal. So the invitation here is I don't think anyone can go back to anything they were before the pandemic. We have all been changed in some fundamental ways that we can't just, it's like our evolution, right? It's like you can't unring a bell, right? So we're evolving. But the point is to recognize what happened to you in that process, what we both called a good, bad, and the ugly, right?
Yeah.
So not to deny the parts of yourself that are more either sensitive or embarrassing or frustrating or what you would call failure, right? Versus the part that's like, well, look how I did this and I rose to the occasion. Here's my silver lining. The goal is to look at all of it without judgment, but with curiosity to see how you performed and what you did and what you took away so that as you go to this next phase of our lives where things are changing and different opportunities are coming our way because of the laws have changed and our jobs are changing and our lives, how we live them. We can recognize something is happening when we're changing again because we're allowed to get on a plane now, right?
Yeah.
And like schools are going to open again. So we have to recognize in our society some of the tangible things we share as humans. We're going to get to go to the grocery store and not worry about toilet paper again. Right? We're going to get to, like, not carry the weight of the small necessities of life in terms of the ones, if we were lucky enough to have that, we won't be obsessed about toilet paper anymore. We won't be worried about if, to me, some of the small things is so, like, can I leave my house today or not? Right? Like, that's like, was there anywhere to go? Like, just the things that restricted us. So the point of this is, what can you learn about yourself from your experience? Not good, not bad, just as it is, it was, right? With all the parts, because what I think of our humanness is our real emotions, our real messiness, right, and our real ability to show growth over time. Yeah. So if we want to utilize this as we move forward, in whatever we're calling it, we are moving in another direction. Most of us do is forward because we don't want to go back, right? We've learned a lot of ourselves. So if we really want to capitalize on that, what do you want to take with you for the journey? What did you learn? Also, what do you want to leave behind and never pick up again?
Yeah. Part of this is all part of what I mentioned, and you can go back to every ripple effect I've mentioned on the show. So what did we learn? What did the generation of young people that were children during 7, 8, 9, and 10 learn? They learned three things. One, my work is not going to be my life. People want to blame this on the millennial thing, right? I mean, I really don't quite understand how you can dismiss what kids went through 7, 8, 9, and 10. I don't know how you can throw that out the window and say, oh, they're not going to get smarter from that. They did. Mm-hmm. And they have a new version. So when you see that generation now coming to the forefront of graduating college, and I've shared this with you before, when they were asked, what is the number one thing you must have from your company? Everybody expected them to say, oh, I want money. No. Empathy. Compassion. Where did they learn that from? Step back. What did they see their parents go through? Their friends, their families, cul-de-sacs, just completely everything's at home. That's what they learned, a generation of people that said, uh-uh, that's not going to work.
And it affected their value system, though, right? That's what affected what they value, what they prioritize. And the fact that sometimes generations have problems reading each other is sometimes about the value of what we say is important. And again, if I think something's important and you don't, who's right and who's wrong? And I think I saw this for myself. I worked for a while at Harvard Medical School as in student affairs, and I saw the difference in the ages of the doctors in terms of who's on call and who should we do call the same way? Should people be exhausted? Is it a rite of passage and a ritual? Have we outgrown the need for that? Or because someone else did it, should I have to do it now too, is what some of the younger generation is saying. Yeah. Is it still a productive practice? And there's even a course that Harvard started called Patient Doctor because it was ready to focus. It recognized, when I give Harvard so much credit, because we have to start a Patient Doctor course because this is missing and we are evolving, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's so many ways we can do that in our lives, right, without having to judge, okay, that means you're wrong and I'm right, because we tend to want to do that. See, I'm right and you're wrong. And what if we just say it's a different value placement, right? It's a different way. I have a different experience, and that helps me show up in a different way than you. And can I honor that? Right.
It's a little parable, a little Buddha, actually Dalai Lama parable. I'm not going to tell the story. There's no time. But the punchline is, it's not good, it's not bad, it just is. And there's a story that goes through a series of little disruptions in life, ultimately with a death or something. And the same answer: it's not good, it's not bad, it just is. What you're talking about is a recognition, a witnessing, and appreciation of the journey that people just went through.
Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what I'm talking about, a recognition for the journey we're on and the global experience that we've shared in this time, but yet the very profound individual impact that's had on us and our own individual experience. So honoring that as we move forward into whatever you want to call it, right, in whatever way, decide what you want to take with you that's beneficial and protect it. And as your values and priorities have shifted, I think people are supposed to go into the ultimate expression of themselves with confidence and thoughtfulness and realizing what their gifts are. And I feel like every experience we have is an opportunity to say, am I going closer to that goal of full expression or am I closing up, right? And so the invitation is, there's been a lot of fear, scarcity, overwhelm, difference, change, whatever you want to call it, that it would easily keep us small.
Yeah.
And now that we have the chance to come out of it and see some opportunity, don't miss out on what you've learned and what you've experienced, and also what you know about yourself to be true right now that is going to help you move forward, again, with that resiliency and that confidence and the humanness that you're going to have.
Then let me ask you another question. I know we have a few minutes left, but here's another realization as I was getting ready for the show and I asked, who am I? I also asked, who am I and what am I doing differently today? And when I added that piece on after I took a look at that, and, you know, and that thing that I'm doing differently today, is that because who am I today is different? I mean, this is like a loop, a touch chicken and egg, but it really was important for me. Mm-hmm. There are some things I'm not going to go back to. Let me tell you what they are. I bought a case of Microbid 24 for the office to spray. I bought an ozone sprayer. I tried to do my best. And on the minute the pandemic hit, I put Jacob and Olivia into the biggest room. I got extra space down the hall for them to eat in. I'm not going to go back to something like that for some odd reason I can't even remember. So there are things that are inherently changed. And not who I am, but what I'm doing and what we're doing and how we're doing it, that it doesn't even feel, it's hard to explain this. I can't even remember like what it was like before, like what was I doing before? Was I just cramming everybody in a room? I mean, that's not really the case. But there's a new level of awareness for me. And that new level of awareness, I can't go back.
Yes.
I don't even remember what the old one was.
Sure. Well, it's almost like sometimes you can't because you don't remember because you've been living this way. And also, I feel like human beings always are working to solve problems and to, like, be adaptable. So if you need something to change, you change it and you figure it out. I mean, you don't go back to something that maybe doesn't work for you anymore. But it's funny that you're saying that. Like, what did we even do before? How did it even work? Because we've been living this way for so long. And but now you say, what's the opportunity now that we're shifting again? It's just another level of shifting again. But yeah. This has been one of the most profound and shared experiences that we have to collectively talk about. That's why it's such a big deal, because it's not just an individual thing. We've collectively gone through something that has irrevocably changed us and how we're going to show up. But I like your idea, too, of, like, how can I go back? I don't even remember what it was like. I don't even remember what I did.
And I don't know if some of this is really, you know, I mean, some of us, it was really stickable. It really stuck. I don't know if it will change. I don't know if inherently in my subconscious, somewhere deep below, I need to be prepared on the what if. I don't listen to the news, but I caught a piece this morning on the variant. And what did I do with it? Not much. Not at the conscious or the subconscious level. What did I do? Today, I hardly leave my office. I don't walk down the 20, 25-foot hall without my mask. I've got it with me. Don't come in the door. Now, Linda, Jessica, they're a little bit more bold like that. I'm like, where's my mask, right? I even caught myself walking into our production room today because we're not wearing masks in here because we're in accordance to somebody's rule about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have my mask on. As a matter of fact, before the show, I had my mask on, put my headset on, looked in, and I'm like, okay, that mask, we can't wear it. So there's some of this we're going to carry with us. That's okay, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And also, your timeline is your own. That's why there's no definitive marker that says, today's the day we're stopping wearing masks, right? Like, there's different comfort levels for us, and there's also we're evolving into our what we want to kind of share with the world, but what we're feel safe about and what we're kind of grown accustomed to that makes us feel better.
Yeah.
Right? So you're on your own timeline with that, but it's interesting because it's also marking change when you're like, what's normal? Is it for me to keep wearing it and other people not too? And how do I navigate that, right? For myself, without judging other people, but also with affirming what you need to do in this moment for you to move forward, right? That's the lesson. Like, and then that's also why it's interesting, because it's not definitive, and there's no right answer, and it's not like a perfect endpoint to be like, from now, we all move forward together. We're all kind of, have you heard the quote, we're all in the same ocean, but we're in different boats. Like, I like that idea.
I just don't want to be in the Titanic.
Oh, God.
That can't be my boat. I've been in the Titanic. It's very important to my life. Karen, don't give me that boat.
Titanic, okay?
Don't give me that boat. Look, I want to, like my mommy used to sing things. She used to say, you want to be in the boat with Michael because he rowed the boat to shore. I grew up for like a lot of years, and I never knew, understood what she was talking about till they came out with a song in the 60s about it. But your point is well taken. This is a time for us to reflect, acknowledge, witness, honor, and respect the entire piece of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are lessons here that I know for me personally, I'm changed in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
I've had to look at some parts of myself, even though I'm not leaving here at 3 o'clock today.
Maybe tomorrow, right?
Maybe tomorrow. But there are parts of this, too, in really looking at other people and honoring their journey, and I think that's what you do so well. See, that's just the work that you're in. You're in front of people every day like that. I'm in front of people that I want to help get to whatever level they want to, but you're in front of people every day. What's your personal message, Gary? What do you want to leave us with? And please tell folks how they can find out more about you, and thank you so much for today.
Sure, thank you, Dr. Pat. I always feel so excited about talking about these things, and my whole company is called Knutson Speaks because everything I do is around talking about processing, thinking about ideas related to psychology and how they can benefit you in your real life without psycho jargon or babble or anything like that that's confusing. I want it to be accessible, and that's why I say take psychology off the couch. So Knutson Speaks is all about speaking, presenting, coaching, connecting, storytelling in ways that are meaningful and relevant. And my message to leave you with today is this: don't forget, or don't put off, I should say, don't put off the telling of your own story during this time. Don't lose the opportunity to mine for your own gold of your own information about what you've experienced, to learn about yourself. And think about, as we're all shifting to something that feels different than what we were, that you have learned a lot about yourself that will help you in the future. And so take this as an opportunity to not just keep going on autopilot, reflect, be kind, and also learn about yourself, because you are fascinating and interesting, and there's a lot that you can learn from this time that will benefit you in the future.
You have been listening to Get Big Out Loud Radio, where we explore the complex, funny, and beautiful ride of life with me, Carrie Knutson, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Monday to you, Benny Authors, here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for Around the Sound. Looks like still on I-5 southbound, just south of the 526. That's up South Everett and in near Payne Field area. Mocopio area, it's having a stop-and-go issue because of an earlier incident that's still blocking the right hand of the lane. Good thing fire assistance, state patrol have arrived on the scene, and they are taking care of that situation in today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news and weather, it's another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network, the Dr. Pat Show Talk Radio to Thrive By, and the Necktie and the Jaguar. More on that, the news and weather, to find out what's going on with that. NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. Search and recovery efforts continue at the South Florida condo collapse site where 94 people are now confirmed dead. Officials said today 4 more bodies have been recovered and 22 people remain missing. Most of the victims have been identified and their families notified. Chicago is coming off another deadly weekend. Police officials say 46 people were shot and 11 of them were killed between Friday evening and early this morning. Democratic Mayor Lori Lightfoot is under increasing pressure to address the situation. The coronavirus infection rate continues to inch upward in New York City. Mayor Bill de Blasio says the city's data now shows the 7-day positivity rate at 1.27%.
Some greater number of cases and positivity, but we also see the thing we care about the most, thank God, hospitalization staying very low.
There are 10 zip codes in the city where the positivity ranges from 2.5% to over 4%. The city's health commissioner calls this the most dangerous time in the city for the unvaccinated because of the highly contagious Delta variant. legendary fiddle player known for bluegrass and playing with rock bands such as the Rolling Stones, has died. According to his family, 77-year-old Byron Berline died Saturday after recently suffering a stroke. Berline was a three-time National Fiddle Champion and was inducted into the National Fiddler Hall of Fame in 2013. He recorded with music legends such as the Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan, and Elton John, including playing on Country Honk, inspired by Honky Tonk Woman, featured on the Stones' Let It Bleed album. And the gypsy moth is getting a new name. The Entomological Society of America says the word gypsy is offensive to the Romani people, so it will be removed from its common names of insects and related organisms list. The group says it will use the scientific name from now on until someone comes up with a new one. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
This is Martha Norwalk, every Sunday morning beginning at 9 a.m. Thanks in part to Nels Rasmussen at SpiritualPetConnection.com. We cover the world of animals. This week, July 18th, it's Behavior Training and Healing Sunday with me, and talk with your human or animal friends on this side or the other, and personal awareness coaching with Natasha Venter. We'll have open phone lines for your calls, so hope you can join us and plan to call in. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your alternative talk weather outlook for Monday. Sunny skies today. High temperatures around 79, 80 degrees. Shaping up to be a pretty nice day. Tonight, clear skies. Low temperatures dropping down to about 59, 60 for Tuesday. And for Wednesday, more sunshine expected. High temperatures a little warmer for Tuesday, around 82. Clear skies through the overnight again for Tuesday night. Lows down to about 58. Wednesday, though, a little cooler, about 5, 6 degrees, down to about 75, 76. But still sunny skies. Partly cloudy skies for Wednesday night, lows down to about 56.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life flat. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. Thank you so much. I've got a really just thrilled to be talking with, you know, someone that I've known for a while. His work is beyond Dr. Carl Greer. I mean, it is so beyond the beyond. And, you know, I was talking earlier, Benny, about Stanley. And you know, there are people that show up in life, and you know that they are called. They are called to create so much that so that the rest of us can step out, so much that so the rest of us can stand on the shoulders of their shoulders. And that's Dr. Carl Greer, you know, a businessman, a philanthropist, retired union analyst. Boy, we could talk about Carl Jung like a lot. Clinical psychologist. And in this book, this memoir, he talks about his early life, post-war, Midwestern, middle class. But, you know, his upbringing so parallels so many of ours. And we're going to talk about that today. You know, what is it about childhood tragedies? What is it that teaches us to live life in such a different way? You know, how much pain do you have to experience in order to learn certain things that will help us look at our emotions, but then for some of us, take it in a totally other direction and totally forget about how to manage our emotions. And so here we are today talking with someone. Success is an understatement. You know, a successful businessman, president of an independent oil and gas company, But what happens at that midlife point? You know, what happens when those of us that don't necessarily get nudged gently by spirit, what happens at that point in life? And by the way, I think midlife is being redefined as we speak. But what happened with him when he recognized that his spiritual self was crying out for so much more? Today, we get to chat with Dr. Carl Greer about that and much more. You know, as somebody that gives back to the world, he has certainly rewritten the script on what it means to pay it forward. But more importantly, he's trained with Peruvian shamans. He's trained with Alberto about healing the Light Body School. He has done so much to set the rest up for those of us that come after him to stand on some very, very powerful deltoids. Dr. Carl, great to have you. Welcome to the show.
Dr. Pratt, thank you very much for those kind words. I'm glad to be here today.
I want to start with the conversation about standing on the shoulders of all that has come before. I want to start that, especially if we're going to talk about the necktie and the jaguar. Certainly, I love this, love the title of it. But I want to talk about that. You know, I remember going back a number of years and having a conversation with Gloria Steinem and talking with her to reflect on her life and what she's done for the women's movement. And her comment stayed with me for a long time. And she says, we all stand on the shoulders of those that have come before. Certainly, that's what we're doing with your work. I want to ask you, when you think about the shoulders of those that have come before you, that you've had the opportunity to stand on, can you think of those that helped shape the Dr. Carl Greer I'm talking to today?
You only know who you know in your life, and I would say that my parents, even though I had different relationships with each of them and with my mother not for too long, I certainly, she was part of who I am. And in some ways, my maternal grandmother was somebody who was very important to me. And then I've had teachers that have made an impression on me. Then in the field of psychology, people with whom I worked as a an LSN when I was in training, and also people with whom I worked, you know, people that I was seeing as a psychologist. I mean, they had surprising influences on me. And then as I got more involved in charities and philanthropies, the causes and the people with whom I've worked really touched me, and they've influenced me. So I've been fortunate in meeting and being able to relate to a lot of people who have made a big impression on me in a continuing way.
Mm. You know, thank you so much for talking about that, because I really do believe that there's so much we can learn from each other. There's so much in the collective that we can learn. But there are so many things that are at the subconscious level, of course, as well. You know, I was reading your book, and I was touched by your grandfather, if I could start there, because you and I, you know, our grandfathers have had an enormous influence, you know, and I never thought that Grandpa Balella would have that influence in me. In your case, taught you woodworking. You know, he showed you his workshop and tools and explained how to use them. And, you know, I'm thinking about that event and how powerful it is. My grandfather, who I later found out was actually born in Brazil, taught me about painting, oil painting. I can remember the smell of kerosene from his little shack, believe it or not, in the Bronx, right? The dude bought property in the Bronx to sell used tires, and he used most of it to grow vegetables and a little shack for oil painting. I want to ask you, those memories of the early years in your life, you know, what kind of feeling did they spark? you know, to help you later on in life when you sort of had that midlife epiphany?
Well, it's interesting. You talk about sets that you remember, you know, the smell of oil. I mean, I remember there was a woodworking, you know, with wood burning, you know, where you put stuff on things.
Yeah.
I remember that smell. And I can remember the smell of my grandmother's cooking. Again, on my both of my grandmothers were good cooks. The one on my mom's side was a baker, and I can remember the comforting smell of cookies and pies. And back then, you know, you had a lot of meat and potatoes and gravy and, and those things cooking. I remember those things. And in terms of another big influence of, with my granddad on my mom's side, he taught me to fish. And we spent a fair amount of time in boats on the shore just fishing and not sometimes saying a word. But that was very, very formative and important to me. That's been with me ever since. And, you know, my kids have learned to fish, as have my grandchildren. And so it's, that's kind of passing it down through the ages.
You know, as I think about the book, and I was really thinking to myself, I was putting myself in your shoes for a moment, albeit not so easy to do, just saying, Dr. Call, like I just, not so easy to do. But I was attempting to do that and just think about this filling and enriched life, right? And I was reading so much about this, including martial arts and so many things that cultivated and sculpt who you are. And you know, the reason I bring this up is, you know, I have this picture of Jung, Carl Jung. Some people don't say Jung. I don't know why I say Jung. I have this picture of him sculpting. You know, he was a sculptor. And I have this picture of him sculpting, and I could never get it out of my mind. You know, this man just standing down sculpting. I wanted to know, when you sat down and write this book, how did writing this book change you? How did the reflection on all of these points in time in your life, how was the journey in writing this book transformative for you?
Well, it was. It happened over a lot of years. I started to, I wrote a couple other self-help books, which I didn't have a lot of my own story in those. And I had some people in my life, family, some friends, who were curious about me. So I started off thinking, well, maybe I'll write a book mostly for my kids and grandkids. And in that process, it allowed me to think about key things in my life that I hadn't thought of for a long time that were poignant. And as I reflected on them and I started to put them all together, I got a little different sense of my story than I would have, Dr. Pat, had I not done it.
Yeah.
So you know, people talk about the power of a recapitulation of your life. And it did that for me. You know, there was obviously you pick and choose what you put into a memoir, and but just that process of thinking about important things, not to say some of the things that aren't in there weren't important, but it just was helpful to me, not only to put some of my past at rest in peace, but also in the time I have left. I think it's given me a little foundation in a funny way to go forward differently than I would have had I not written the book. I mean, it's kind of helped me prioritize what's important to me more than I would have had I not written it.
You know, I'm going to skip this break because I want to continue to talk about this. I have an interesting question for you. If Carl Jung were here now, you and I both have a relationship with Carl Jung, Dr. Jung. If Carl was here now, Dr. Jung were here now, what might he say about the archetypes of the necktie and the jaguar?
he's a very deep guy, so it might not have been the surface thing, but it might have. I mean, you know, neckties are constricting, and jaguars unless you have a little sense of Inca mythology, you might not know all the meanings that come to, somebody was talking about a jaguar, but Jung was interesting in the interplay between the conscious world and the unconscious world, and I think he could have played with the idea of the necktie was kind of the everyday world, and the jaguar was more the interior world, and how they interact with each other can be, in some sense, all important, because if the interior world and the exterior world aren't in balance, a person can have issues in their everyday life.
Boy, I'm telling you, isn't that the truth? You know, I want to ask you this question, Dr. Greer. One of the things that I found so interesting about the book as I was reading it, it was just, I was captivated by the way you were telling the story in the book. Everything from karate to neckties, but I was really interested in the karate competition people that showed up with tattoos. That's we'll save that for another show maybe. But that got my attention. But this is a time we're living in right now. And the timing of your book, I couldn't have been better, because this is a book that really calls us to reflect. But more importantly, I think we're all looking at what is the new narrative of our lives. Can you talk for a minute about the book in itself and the book's journey to discuss and maybe encourage meaningfulness and fulfillment in our lives, as you did, and, you know, more importantly, to change our stories and to change our lives? I mean, this I found so fascinating, because if people read the book, or when they read the book, they're going to see the multiple levels of personal change you made from the inside, the outside, and all of the sides. But talk about this journey, this book, helping us understand life, meaning, fulfillment, and how to change our stories.
Yeah, I, in addition to writing it just to kind of make myself find more peace and to share my story with family and friends, I started to think that a lot of the themes that I encountered were themes that other people might encounter in their own lives. So I thought, I'll pose some questions at the end of each chapter that a reader could choose or not choose to reflect on. But if they chose to, it might just allow them to spend time, like I did, reflecting on important juncture points in their lives, themes of leadership, being followers versus leaders, competitiveness versus not, growing up in really emotionally distraught upbringings, having childhood trauma, having a perfect, in your mind, upbringing and yet having problems in everyday life. You know, all the universal questions, you know, do I like my job? What if I do if I don't? Happy in my relationships, what's my relationship to my children, to my parents, to my loved ones, to my friends. You know, it's just all the life issues that I was confronting. I thought, well, you know, maybe some readers may want to reflect on those things themselves with the questions that I pose as a springboard for reflection. So that was one of the things that I was hoping that could happen for some readers. And for me, you know, I had a pretty scripted life. You know, I grew up in the Midwest. My parents came from relatively humble backgrounds. And my dad had a job with U.S. Steel, and we were in the steel industry. And I based on my childhood friends and my parents' friends. Not, you know, if I graduated college, got a job in a factory or mill, and had it for 45 years, and could support a wife and family, and take some vacations, go to church on Sunday, you know, maybe play sports. You know, that would be a good life. And in many ways, it is a good life. But there was part of me that was wanting something else, and I was fortunate that I was able to give voice to that something else and help over many years actualize it. And so I shared that process in the book as well.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that because, you know, I think a lot of people are going through this right now. I'm starting to look at a number of my colleagues who are doing surveys and studies and, you know, talking with people that did not go back to their jobs, right? I mean, it's an interesting statistic. People did not go back to their jobs. It's like they had what I went through, you know, in my transition, sort of my awakening, you know, what you talked about, there's a part in the book, I want to just get to it real quick, because I think this really hits a lot of people. There's a part in the book, you know, where you, I think it's in the working with all the moving parts part of the book. And it says, my internal drive to get things done according to my schedule sometimes kept me from spending as much time with people as I should have. For example, engaging in collaborative thinking about how they could accomplish a goal, right? But then you say something interesting. On the other hand, I was also aware that it was appropriate to have limits to each interaction if I was going to manage effectively. Wow. I could take those two sentences out of a lecture I sat in with Peter Drucker. I went to Claremont, and we were allowed to sit in the Peter Drucker classes, although all of the psychology people really weren't allowed to talk, right? You could come in and you could sit in the back, but 3 hours, the man never moved. But I love that. This was an art to learn about how to manage people, give people enough time, but not be intrusive in productivity. And I started to look at that, and I thought to myself, wow, there's that part of who we become based on childhoods that are not so great, where I think we learn that skill from having a traumatic childhood. I don't know. What do you think?
I laid the emotional groundwork for it. But one of the teachings for myself was it's not always this or that, or all of this or all of that. It's like, in looking back, I wish I would have been more patient, a better listener. But at the time, being a boss, it served me to try to get things done. And so I didn't dance that dance as well then as I might have who I am now. But I didn't have that awareness. I was kind of driven by a different drummer at that time. And so I think we're fortunate if we can take time to reflect, Dr. Pat, and make those course adjustments as we go along. I think it's a question of to do that. You have to have intent to do it and kind of an act of grace with the higher power, however you think about that.
Yep. I don't know what it is about age 41, but I want to talk about, you know, parts of the book where you beautifully describe not only what your journey is, but they're really takeaways from every chapter, from everything you put in here. Everything from right tactics and right timing, but especially patience. And I want to talk with you about patience for a minute, because I think that learning patience, let me just put it differently. Given where we sit today, you know, had things not changed here in the past couple of months, people's patience were wearing thinner than thin. And
you know, I want to ask you, is patience a spiritual journey?
I think so. I mean, it's like all you can, it's how you perceive it, you know, who's doing the looking. And you can, three different people can look at the same set of facts and they would have different meaning to them. I'm in the context of your question with you right now, see patience to me as slowed me down, allowed me to be aware of other things than, you know, kind of the mucky chatter in my head, and therefore get in touch with other parts of myself and maybe other parts of life that I wouldn't have had I not been patient. So in that sense, it's very spiritual. And it's a practice. I mean, how do you slow down when you're kind of programmed, as I was, and still am in some place, to keep doing a lot of stuff? And I'm better at it than I was. And it has been, it's taken time and effort to do so. So, yeah, I believe, and I'm affirming what you said. I think it is a spiritual practice.
Mm-hmm. You know, this book is, first of all, I just love to read the step-by-step, you know, pathway you've taken. I want to take a short break because when we come back, I want to talk about what happens in our 40s. Now, you and I happen to have 41 as like a thing, like 41. Maybe it happened before 41. But there was something about 41, not 40, not 39, not 43, 41. When we come back, I want to talk with you about those pivotal moments. The moments where you realized, or maybe it wasn't like a moment, but you had like an awakening. There was something about your uber successful life, right? Something about everything that was happening that just seemed like it might not fit anymore. I describe mine as walking out of the house one day, out of a very big house I owned, an executive thing with a big garage and the whole deal, dressed in my little AT&T suit with the bow ties. Can you see me there? And walking out of the house, right, with heels on, getting ready to leave, and took one last look in the mirror, as I always did. And I had a moment where I was unrecognizable to myself. We're going to take a short break when we come back. For those of you out there, The Necktie and the Jaguar, a memoir to help you change your story and find fulfillment. Dr. Carl Greer. The way of the warrior. What does that look like? And how does each of us get to that place and end up on a pathway that may look so different than everything else that came before? I can't wait to hear what happened to Dr. Carl Greer. We'll be right back, everybody. Stay tuned.
Even though your home base is one Enneagram type, you have characteristics of all the types. Tune in to Enneagram Conversations with Renee Siegel the second and fourth Monday of each month at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn how you can unlock your unlimited potential. Visit YouArePurePotential.com for more about Renee and her work. That's the letter U, the letter R, PurePotential.com.
Hey there, I'm Ricky Schwartz from My Turn Life Coaching, Reclaim Your Life. How do you know if you're living your life and not someone else's? Here's one way to find out. First, list out your top five core values. For example, mine are empathy, excellence, passion, service, and core values. Then put those core values into short first-person core value statements. In my case, one, empathy powers my relationships. Two, excellence is the goal in all things I do. Three, passion fuels my perseverance. Four, my value is measured by my service to others. And five, core values drive all of my life decisions. Now ask yourself, am I using my core value statements to drive my personal and professional decisions? Maybe not. Maybe you've never even considered doing so. And that's where life coaching begins. Go to MyTurnLifeCoaching.com and let's put your personal core values into your driver's seat.
Caring for someone with a life-altering diagnosis? You are a care hero. Navigating the unfamiliar options can be overwhelming, but you are not alone. Tune in to A Cup of Comfort with me, Trish Lau, twice monthly on Transformation Talk Radio. Let me guide you through your care hero journey by providing actionable information on how to care for a loved one in need. For more information about me, visit TrishLaub.com. That's Trish Laub, L-A-U-B as in boy, .com.
Learn how to lead a happier life on Miles to Go with Brittany Miles. How to lose to gain it all. Join Brittany every second and fourth Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Listen as coach and healer Brittany Miles shares stories that teach you about surrender. For more information about Brittany, MilesToGoCoaching.com.
Are you ready to shift your life into overdrive and stop wasting your time? If so, then I want to invite you right now to the Body Regeneration Online Academy with me, Tracy L. In a world filled with so much information, you can get overloaded and confused, left feeling like you've tried everything and still no results. If this is you, then this platform is for you to help you step into your power, your intuition, and gain clarity. You will learn simple tools that you can use as you walk down the street, and I will teach you how to grow a stronger connection to the God consciousness. Imagine having me as your coach, shifting you, uplifting you, empowering you every week, and most of all, helping you stay connected so you can navigate your life journey with ease and grace. Nothing will be able to get in your way, but you will have a community filled with souls just like you to pick you up when you fall down and support you on your wins. No one can go this journey alone. If you are ready for your live activation, check me out at TracyLClark.com and join the TLC Body Regeneration Online Academy now.
Welcome back. Hey, look, if you want to find out more about Dr. Carl Greer, please check it out. Go over to his fantastic website. And it's simple, Carl Greer, G-R-E-E-R.com. And you can sign up for announcements, and that's where you also will be able to find the book. The book is available pretty much, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, independent stores, I believe. But this is the deal. Also, this next part of our conversation is about changing the story. It's about changing the story. It's about giving back. It's about understanding about those moments in our lives, you know, where something happens. Something happens. You know, he and I come from this interesting background, but also, I mean, how do you go from that person to then go to Columbia University, to then go and study with shamans? How do you do that? Well, if you go take a look at Carl's work, and I mean seriously take a look at it, you know, there are so many books, his blogs, he's rewritten the story on giving back, I just want to say. But this is where we can all take a look at our lives right now. The Necktie and the Jaguar, the book that I've got in front of me, The Necktie and the Jaguar, is all about that. It's about the pivotal moments of our lives that show up, if we could recognize them and then do something about it. Dr. Greer, thank you so much for this, and thank you for the book. Look, before the break and during the break, I was kind of telling you, like, I swear, when I talk about that moment and walking down, I could tell you, I could describe that foyer area like it was yesterday, and it wasn't yesterday. Age 41, something about it, looking in the mirror. What was it for you? And the reason I ask you is I don't think it was like that moment that everything happened. I just think that was the moment that the universe spirit got my attention. I think it was building. how was it like for you? And I'm also curious about your return to Okinawa karate, and you know how that might have fueled some things. Was it like that for you? Did an alien take over your body?
You said you returned to. I didn't hear what you said. You returned to what?
What I'm asking is, what was that point for you? Was it when you decided to go back and take Okinawa karate again? Was it that? Or did something happen before that where you were just like, oopsie, this doesn't feel good?
It might be I was kind of a slow reactor to life because when I graduated high school, I was interested in, you know, liberal arts. You know, I like to read fiction books and daydream a little bit. And I really felt that that would not serve me well. I needed to kind of, the word I used to myself back then was burn those tendencies out. And I went to school in engineering, which was as far away from that as you can imagine. And but I had, even then, kind of an interest, Dr. Pat, in psychology. So I thought about, you know, maybe switching my major in college in my senior year. Decided that would be the height of unpracticalness. So I put that at bay for many, many years. Went to graduate school, got a degree in business. I taught at Columbia in business, and then became a businessman for many years. But I still had this part of me that thought, you know, maybe I'd like to give vent to the spiritual side of me, maybe study about psychology. I thought that would be a means to that end. And just didn't think it was practical. I thought it was kind of a dumb idea, and I kept telling myself that until it just kind of became more and more powerful in me to try it. And in my early 40s, I decided, well, I'm going to, you know, consider going back while I'm still working and getting a degree, you know, part-time in psychology to see where that would lead me. And ultimately, I wanted to be a Jungian analyst, not knowing much more about Carl Jung other than that he was in myths and stories and fairy tales, which I used to like to read. And we were talking earlier about Marvel comic books. I used to read the those as a kid. So I like stories, and I associate that with Jung, not realizing that there's a lot of things you have to do to become a Jungian analyst, not the least of which is have some training in psychology and be analyzed yourself. So all these things came to a head in my early 40s, and I ended up deciding to go back to school in psychology and continuing working my day job, which I've done ever since then. But I've just had the opportunity, fortunately, I've had enough resources that I accumulated to allow me to pursue all these other interests. And I realize that a lot of people don't have that luxury. You know, you give up one path unless you really plan for it. You know, it's a big risk. So when I'm talking to people about that, I'm saying, you know, experiment, try change at the margin. And and that surprisingly can allow people to ultimately make big changes. But for me, it was a process of, it finally became the time, and it wasn't like a dramatic moment. I just kind of felt this yearning inside myself. I said, it's time to do this. And that's how it worked for me.
You know, I love to be able to read a book like this. And I think what we're talking about is what's encouraging so many people. You and I, too. I mean, my childhood, how do I say this? You know, what was it about comic books for us that in our childhood, what was it about our childhood where we found relief out of comic books? And I could tell you, not only did I buy pretty much every comic book on the planet, but I used to redraw the characters. You know, very unfeminine, by the way, because comic books were not really seen as, unless you were getting the Veronica one, you know,
Wonder Woman.
That's right. Boy, I'll tell you, that saved my life more times than not.
But there was something about this and something about the archetypes of them that, you know, helped, I think, for me as well, guide me. You know, but taking that next action, action to then fully step into the world, to fully say, yes, I am going to do this. I'm going to make that change, right? I'm going to reintegrate. I'm going to do that. Those are the pivotal moments. And like, it sounds like that was a pivotal time for you, too.
It was. It kind of set the stage for things that have happened over the years. Now that I'm 81 years old, it's still happening. So you're right. These influences, we both know stuff about archetypes, and archetypes are energies that influence how we think, act, and feel. And, you know, they can be heroic, and they can be tragic, and they can be mean-spirited and all those things, but they're around us all the time, and it behooves us to try to have a conscious relationship to them, or they will, in their own way, influence us in ways that maybe isn't in our best interest.
I want to jump ahead because there's so many parts in this that I love. I love where there's this evolution of you to really teach, and I believe it was in a Christian organization, but teach multi, you know, let's just call it multiple faith beliefs or multiple beliefs of Buddhism and so forth. You know, this became an expression, it sounds like, for you as also on a way to discovery. Right? And
yeah.
I want to ask you, you know, this beautiful integration. I have three friends, you know, a rabbi, a Muslim, and, you know, Pastor Bob. And they created Interfaith Radio. And I was always fascinated by it. But this sounds like this was a pathway, a gateway for that next step, was it?
Yeah, I was, my son was in ninth grade, and it was a confirmation class in the church, and the pastor asked me if I could teach it, and with my sister-in-law, she and I taught this course, so we had some freedom as to what we would teach, and so obviously I wanted the Christian message to be you know, the one we spent the most time on, but I wanted the kids to get an idea that there are other great religions, and so we visited mosques. We visited, you know, Buddhist, Zen Buddhist places of worship, Hindu temples, Baha'i. We studied Judaism. So we had a chance to learn a lot about other religions. And I wanted the young people to get a sense of not all the doctrinal problems, but the commonalities and how each of them at core have the message that know yourself, you're part of a larger energy, God or spirit, however you think about it, and give back. And all of them have at one level the ethos of giving back. So for me, early on, to be part of teaching that was important, and it was very meaningful to me to do that.
And, you know, let's talk about what I call the leap. And maybe the leap is from the necktie to the jaguar. Maybe they're different, maybe they're one and the same, but there's a leap. I mean, I felt the leap for myself, and I want to ask you about it, because even though some of these dots get connected, like, so naturally after a point, right, where we start to get a new level of awareness, Dr. Greer, and we get this new level of awareness, dots start to get connected automatically. I was sharing with you during a break. There's no way that the absolutely no humanly possible way without an intervention from the universe that I was going to get from Livingston, New Jersey to Columbia in 45 minutes and be able to get up there and register. I mean, there's just some things that you just can't explain in that way. And let's talk about the leap, because some parts of our journeys don't feel like a leap when we're in them, but certainly when I read your book,
it feels like a leap. Although you learn about vulnerability, you learn about collaboration instead of competition, and you talk about all these things in the book, but you call it discovering what had been hidden. Is that the first step? Is that what we need to really do before we can take the leap?
I think so. The first steps for me were when I decided to go back to school in psychology, and I had to go into analysis myself. So a lot of the way I thought I was and what was driving me, I found out that I had some unconscious things that I needed to address and come to grips with. So that was a big thing. And so for many years, being in analysis, becoming a psychologist, becoming a Jungian analyst, helped me to get more at peace with my inner life. But kind of the big move, I would say, when I was around 60, I really got seriously interested in shamanism. And I had some experiences in what I would call the transpersonal worlds in shamanism through journeys, some with plants and some without, that really changed even more my worldview and got me into the jaguar spiritual, meaningful, mythopoetic part of myself more than the jaguar part. So it was kind of a culmination, Dr. Pat, of a lot of the things I'd done. And then for 20 years, shamanism has been an important spiritual part of my life. But so has Christianity, and so has Eastern philosophy, and so has martial arts. So it's all kind of fitting together in a way that works for me.
I want to ask you, I love that you've written this book, and I love that I'm hearing the time in your life that you are reading this book. I want to talk a little bit about how this book and how what you've written and the sharing of a powerful, powerful life's journey and story, how might we use some of the lessons you've had to help change the narrative for people in the world today?
I would say one big takeaway for me, and I could suggest for others, would be to really learn how to listen. And that means to news, with friends, with family. It's a great gift to give somebody to just listen, and not feel that you're just waiting your turn to talk and say what you have to say, and not feeling you have to help them and, fix stuff for them. You just listen. It's a great gift. And I think if a person can do that, that's a good starting point. Because we have a world right now, it seems, Dr. Pat, that has, a lot of divisiveness, and people aren't listening to each other, and they're sharing, in many cases, different sets of facts. So if you listen and you have some actual knowledge of your facts, you might have an opportunity in listening to those who may not share your views to somehow, without getting it too contentious, just share your facts. Say, well, this, and that, and so forth. And if nothing else, they feel heard.
Yeah.
Because right now, a lot of people just don't feel heard. And so that'd be one thing. The other thing that we talked about earlier is to be patient. Some things just need to work out in their own time, in their own way. But the paradox there is, the other side of that is, sometimes you have to cut the cord. You have to know when to let something die and move on to something else. So that's a question of discernment and to have another source of information about those decisions. That's what I talk about, going to these transpersonal realms, and that involves having a relationship to your unconscious, and you can do that through meditation, you can do that through analysis, you can do that through your dreams, and you can do that through shamanic work and journey work. The other thing I would say that's important for me and many friends that I have is spending time in nature. Really spend time in nature and see nature as an active being that's observing us just as we are observing her. And and sometimes just being still, just being, learning how to be there, we can get answers to some of the things that are working us or, you know, troubling us in ways that we don't even believe are possible just by sitting in front of a lake and watching the water go by, watching the clouds, or being around a bunch of pine trees. Those are things that I might suggest that people consider doing to make changes. You know, listen better, be patient, spend time in nature.
You know, the other part of this that I love is, there are two parts of this, Carl, that I just want to talk about. One, I'm really struck by one thing. And, you know, we've heard this over and over again. So many people whose names we know looked at their lives and jumped in the deep end of the pool. And, you know, it doesn't matter who you look at, whether you look at Georgia O'Keeffe or whether you look at Colonel Sanders. You know, there are people that just did not let time become the predictor of their fulfillment in life's pathway. And I'm really struck by the Jaguar's call, right? You know, and studying with Alberto as well. And certainly, you know, early on, he was one of the first people I interviewed way back and was so struck by that work that it shifted my direction, not only of the show, but my own personal life. And I want to ask you, when the Jaguar calls, how do you answer?
Well, in this particular situation, this is where you get into kind of the mystical. Alberto and I, two of us, were doing some work together. He is a friend. I taught him in school. And so we were doing some work together. And he had given me a stone to work with. In which he had said, you know, there's an energy of a jaguar that a shaman many centuries earlier had put into the stone in a sacred place, maybe Machu Picchu. So you had the energy of the stone, the energy of the jaguar, and the energy of the shaman all kind of in this rock. And so that was as we were doing the work, the stone in my hand started to throb in the eyes of the object, and it started to move, literally. So I'm seeing this, he's seeing this, and so, you know, feed it, because energetically, when you get into these realms, these things can feed on you. And so I sprayed it with Florida water, and I felt then this, you know, that life is bigger than and you can think in these realities in which we are a part that, you know, we don't even realize. And so this connection to this thing other than me and the things that got set in my energy body and that night and another many times to follow, I think in some ways kind of rewired me.
Yeah, that's
so,
it.
I'm different, and it's allowed me to be less constricted, which was the necktie, in ways that are hard to describe other than what I'm attempting to do now, and allowed me to be freed up to live differently than I otherwise would have, and allowed me to be less acquisitive and more wanting to give back, because as I've gotten the end of my life, I really, you know, I spent a lot of time acquiring things, but now I'm really spending all my time, how can I get rid of them in meaningful ways in the time I have left? So it's interesting. And I think, Dr. Pat, the shaman work has been an impetus to all that in ways that I can't necessarily describe, you know, all the means and ends to it, but it has certainly been, you know, you come into this life with nothing, and you leave with nothing in some ways other than your acquired experiences. And so to try to make a difference with what you have in terms of my knowledge, my energy, and my money, and that's what I'm trying to do in the time I have left.
And I love that I ask you that question. I mean, first of all, Dr. Greer, thank you for joining me here today. There's so much. I mean, I could go on and talk with you about it. But, you know, part of this is so important, these moments. I mean, I never thought in a million years that my boss sending me out in 1997 on a vision quest with the woman Sidonia Cahill so that I was supposed to steal her ideas. Never would have done it, by the way. But that thing did for me the way you're describing. And I can't describe it. When people ask me about it, I can't describe it. My very close friends, I've been able to read from that journal, for those that really want to know. But that's the energy and the juice that I read in your book that really brings you forward in order to help us all create a better world. And I wanted to thank you so much for that. I want to thank you for writing the book to inspire us to do more in the way of creating a better world. And, you know, thank you for all of that. I would love to know, what's your personal message? What would you like to leave us with? And thank you again for bringing the story to the forefront.
Well, thank you for having me today. And again, those kind words. I think we all have a chance to write a new story, even up to, if we have a few weeks to live. It's just how we can change our perspective about our world and our life, and believe that we're part of a loving, bigger energy, that we came from that, we're going to go back to that, and have faith that that's the case. And being in nature has helped me be reminded of that. I mean, in the last couple of years, I've had open-heart surgery and, bypass surgery, and I've had treatments for prostate cancer and, lots of life things, which have made me much more aware of my mortality and how much time I have left. And right now I'm doing fine. But I think all of us have more power, even if we have a short time to live, to make that time differently than we think. And it's between us and spirit to kind of figure that out. And I think part of the ways for me that's worked, spending time in nature, working with my dreams, taking a little time, frankly, to just reflect and not get so busy that we have time to periodically take a look at our lives.
No, I completely agree with you in that way. Thank you so much for everything you've done. Thank you. And again, I just want folks to know, Carl, that they can go to your website, carlgreer.com, and certainly they can get a copy of the book. And for those of you that missed any part of this, please watch it again or listen to it again later on today. The Necktie and the Jaguar, a memoir to help you change your story and find fulfillment, for Carl Greer.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle.